Yeah, and it's I've been in rooms where I'd think of an idea and I wouldn't say it, and then someone else had come up with the idea and I'm like, darn, like why didn't I just bloody speak up? So then I got to the point where I was like, no, I'm gonna start saying ideas, because sometimes people would look at you like, that's a crazy, like what are you? And then I got to the point, I'm like, well, hold on a minute, because sometimes what happens is you come up with an idea and someone goes, no. But then they come off, they have an idea off your idea. So if I didn't come up with that crazy idea, you wouldn't have come up with this idea and it wouldn't change things. So no idea is stupid.
You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. Today's guest is development and story artist Sharon Bridgman. Sharon was born in Ireland and worked as an animator, supervisor, and character designer for studios in Dublin, London, and Berlin before making her way to California. She's currently a story artist at a newer studio called Spire Animation, but her first job in animation was as an in-betweener on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and that was when she was in Ireland, and her titles have only gotten more fun and impressive since. Having worked in feature and TV, you may recognize some titles you probably love. For me, that title is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. How cool! Prior to Sony, Sharon worked at DreamWorks Animation for features such as Boss Baby, Abominable, Kung Fu Panda Secrets of the Scroll, Kung Fu Panda 2, Rise of the Guardians, and Spirit. Today, Sharon will talk with us through her journey, share her secret to pitching and how it's okay to not know everything, and how it's okay to be soft-spoken or not have big energy when pitching. And she also shares how no idea is stupid and every voice deserves to be heard. And just a heads up, there was some construction happening during the interview, so you'll hear quite a bit of it. I was unable to edit it all out. Sorry about that. So grab a beverage of your choice, sketch while you listen if you like, and enjoy.
Hi, my name is Sharon Bridgman-Lukic, and I'm a story artist, and I've been in the business since 89. And what I love about animation is storytelling. That's my big, because since I was a kid, I just love stories, and especially doing boards, it's like I get to visually tell these stories, and that's what gets me excited. And the people, I love the people I work with, so it's every day is exciting.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. There's such friendly and warm people here. So 89, that's amazing. That's so long ago.
You know, usually people would say, oh, I don't want to say my age, but I'm proud of my age. I'm proud I'm still here and I survived in animation. So yeah, so it's interesting because I've seen a lot of things happen over the years. Yeah. So, yeah.
You've seen the transition to digital and the transition to CG. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like drawing used to be pitching on, you know, cork boards with, you know, pieces of paper and drawing, you know. So now it's, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
So, I romanticize that time just from like having learned about it or watched documentaries about animation, right? And it's always like, oh, that sounds like such a romantic time to be alive and work in an animation.
Yeah, it still had the same stress. Okay. You know, but you know, with digital it's great, because at first I was like, oh no, because I'm such a technophobic, I just, you know, I and it took me a while to get used to drawing on the Cintiq, but now I go, oh my god, it's so much quicker. Like when you think of drawing on a paper and you do a mistake, you'd have to erase it, an eraser, and you know, so there's definitely advantages.
Yeah,
yeah.
I
I wish I could have control Z'd something I did this morning.
Oh,
I accidentally dumped fresh coffee down the drain thinking it was old because I forgot I'd already made it. I was like, control Z, where are you?
I'd love to control Z a lot.
Yeah. So you have worked in the Europe animation industry as well as America. And I'm wondering, like, are you, I hear an accent. Are you from Ireland? Yes.
I'm from Ireland, the old sod. I started in animation in Dublin, which it was actually two American companies came over, and it was Sullivan Bluth and Fred Wolf Studio. So Fred Wolf was more like TV and Sullivan Bluth was feature. So I ended up going to Fred Wolf Studios. My first job was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I literally learned on the job. I didn't know what I was doing. So I sat at a desk, you know, and I was given an exposure sheet and I'm like, what is this? I don't know. And my friend Nora, who's still my friend today, Nora Johnson, she's in animation. She showed me. So it was kind of hard, but exciting at the same time, learning on the job, you know. So that's where I started. I was an in-betweener. So that was my first job, and I dabbled in animation, and it was kind of nice. It was exciting at that time because we were all starting off, you know, and I didn't think as a kid like I could get a job in animation because, you know, back then it was pretty dismal. There was a lot of unemployment, and so I'm like, okay, I can draw, but where does that take me? You know, it wasn't like back then it was like, hey, you know, if you can draw, you can work in animation. So it was, the timing was actually perfect for me to get into the studio.
Like, to get the job, did you like showcase some drawings or put together a portfolio? What was that like?
Well, it was interesting because I just wanted to get a job. My mother was a single mother. So there was just my mother, my sister, and myself. So in my head, I'm thinking, I just need to get a job to help my mother. And she was the one that said, Sharon, please, there's this animation course, this drawing course. And it was a community course, because we didn't have money. And it was like, I went, okay. And we were supposed to learn animation, but we didn't, because the guy who was teaching it left. So the one thing that stood out for me was my life drawing. So that's really what got me in, you know, and some of my fantasy drawings, because I love fantasy. So I stuck them in, you know. So yeah, that's how I got the job. So I was very lucky.
Well, that's incredible. And I didn't know that Fred Wolf had a studio outside of LA.
he was amazing, because I have to say that studio was very, there was never like, oh, you know, you're a woman, you can't do this. He was very, like, there was women supervisors. And it's interesting, your show's called Ink and Paint, because my sister supervised Ink and Paint. So she was in that department, and then I was in the assistant department. But I remember saying to Fred, I'd love to do animation. And he was like, okay. So it was a very, that was great about the studio. You know, it was like, if you really wanted to kind of get into a department and you worked hard, he was like, yeah, sure. You know, so I'll always appreciate and love him for that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Do you feel like, because in my experience too, like, as long as people know what you want, they're usually very supportive in trying to figure out how to mentor you to get there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I came across some some not so encouraging people, but I think when you have a vision, you just are like, I am, you know, because I wanted to do storyboards back then. And I'd end up doing revisions, and I really wanted it, but it wasn't until I came to America that I started doing boards. So I went from in-betweening, and then I did character design, and then I went into storyboarding. So it was, I never really knew what I was doing, but when it came to storyboards, I was like, that's what I want to do.
So that's really interesting, because you first, like, wanted, when you were in between, or wanted to be an animator. So that was the path you were taking. So when, can you talk more about the shift to thinking that you would prefer to do something else in animation? Because I feel like a lot of people, you know, they always tell us the, like, focus on the thing that you want, like your portfolio, all your skill learning. But sometimes the job isn't what some people expect, and they see other jobs, you know, in the peripheral. They're like, maybe that's more for me.
Yeah, it wasn't, I think, first of all, me thinking I wouldn't get into animation. It was like, even getting into animation was kind of like, whoa, what's this thing? I mean, I loved animation, looking at it. I loved drawing. I was always drawing. I was very quiet as a kid, so I'd always be in my book, you know, sketching. So when I got into animation, it's like, okay, in betweening, yeah, this is great, I'm drawing. And then it was like, oh, hey, those guys in there are animating. They actually get the scene and create the characters moving. So, but what happened was when I got into animation, it was very hard for me. And I, you know, because when you got into animation there, it was like, okay, 60 feet a week. And you're like, I don't even know how to animate.
That's so many feet.
Yeah, exactly. So no one was teaching me really. So, and I'm doing these action sequences and I'm sure they were horrible. I'm sure they were bad. So it ended up, I was like, oh, this is not what I thought it was. So I ended up going back to assisting. But then I ended up running the assistant department. And what happened was the studio, there was a huge layoff and then it just went into pre-production. So I was kept on as a character designer, which, you know, I love drawing figures. So I'm like, this is perfect. But then I start seeing the storyboards and I'm like, it's kind of like film and I love film. And you get to really set up the characters and the room and cinematography. So then I started kind of, and I remember seeing the Batman animated series and I was like, wow, you know, could you imagine doing boards on that? So it kind of organically, I went through this kind of process. There was no plans. But once I set my sights on storyboarding, I think that's when it really clicked for me, you know. So when I went into animation, there was no, oh, I'm going to do this. Or it was almost like, oh, I got a job. Oh, this is what I do. I do in between. So there wasn't really a plan. But I think what happens is sometimes, and I've heard other people, like you might think, oh, I want to do storyboards. And then you're like, you know, it's a lot of work, but I love doing backgrounds and development. So sometimes it can organically, you just lean into something else, you know, it takes on a different path, you know.
I admire people who love doing backgrounds.
They're so hard. I know, they're like, because when I started storyboarding, I was used to drawing figures. So I wasn't really doing the backgrounds and the director's like, Sharon, you're going to have to put the backgrounds. So I kind of had to learn, you know, perspective. And it's like, it's just as much part of, you know, the characters. And then also backgrounds are a character, you know, in movies and animation. So it's kind of, you kind of have to have a bit of everything to do boards. Yeah.
Do you feel like having the experience in the other departments helped prepare you for storyboarding?
Yeah, I definitely, yeah, big time doing character design, because that's a really hard part. And then also I forgot to mention, I did character layouts, a film Roman on The Critic. So you're basically acting, you know, they're like animation poses. So that helped me with acting and, you know, moving characters and then doing the character design. So when I went into boards, I had that acting skill, which they liked. So then it was just kind of honing in, okay, I need to learn perspective, backgrounds, I'm good with character. So now I need to focus on perspective.
How do you practice acting? Like, did you take any acting classes or anything
like that? No, I would be the worst. We had to do an acting class at DreamWorks and it was like hell for me. Because it was just because I'm a very private person, very, you know, shy. But I've seen animators look at mirrors. It comes from me. So if I'm drawing a sequence or a character, probably like what actors do, I go into that or I pick a time I felt that emotion and how I felt at that time. So I put that into my acting and my board. So I just pull the emotions out. Yeah.
So you've worked in both film and TV. Do you like one over the other?
I kind of, I'll tell you, I miss about TV, because I ended up, which was great, I ended up working, my first boarding job was on Bruce Timm's Superman. So cut to me in Ireland thinking, oh my God, I'd love to work on that Batman. And then I end up, that was my first storyboard job. And it was Kurt Gaeta who trained me, thank God. But what I used to love is the footage would come in for the episode. So, you know, there was three board artists on one show, so each board artist got an act. So we used to run up to the conference room and you'd get to see, you know, your act from beginning to end. So I kind of miss that, whereas in feature, it becomes a little nebulous. Like, you know, I could work partly on a sequence, you would, maybe someone else would redo it. So it's constantly, you know, I mean, sometimes, yeah, you get to see, oh, I did that sequence, but it changes so much sometimes. So I kind of miss that from TV. It's like, yeah, I did that sequence, or I did that act right there. So
anytime I see storyboard artists in TV, I'm just like, it seems like it's such a sprint. Like all the departments are definitely a sprint, but especially storyboarding. Because it's such a lot of work. Like everyone works very hard. I'm not saying.
No, but I totally, yeah, everyone works hard. But I think what's hard about, you know, because I'm training someone right now and I'm like, what's hard about boards is sometimes you don't have the backgrounds, you don't have character design. So on top of that, you're kind of doing everything, you know, and also in feature, it's a sprint as well, because sometimes you're like, we need the sequence now. So you could have like maybe 2 days to do something. So sometimes feature can be very, you know, but the nice thing about feature is you can be really rough. Whereas in TV, the TV people I feel so bad for, it has to be clean, has to be on model, you know, so that's tough.
So you've worked at a lot of studios over the years, but the past couple, like year or so, you've been working at a new studio I'd love to hear more about, Spire Animation.
Yeah, actually it was so weird because I just, you know, 2020, my mother passed away. And it was a really difficult time, and you know, I lost a couple of people, and so again, everyone was going through, you know, such a hard time, and I didn't work for a few months, and I remember talking to my friend, and it was weird how it happened, because I was getting offers from studios, but I just wasn't ready emotionally, I you know, and I was just like, I don't know if I can jump into a big studio. My heart is still not, you know, back to normal. And so I was on the phone to my friend and she was saying, well, what about Spire? I saw something on LinkedIn, and then literally, because I was saying, I'd love to just start in a small studio that's growing. And after I hung up the phone, I get an email from Deborah Blanchard. Hey, Mike Surrey was asking about you from Spire. And I was like, okay. And then I met with Mike Surrey, Ellen Koss, Sean Krause. And I swear it was such a great interview. And I remember telling my husband, I said, I haven't felt this happy in a long time. And so then I met Brad Lewis, and then I met PJ Gunzer, and it was like, okay, this is meant to be, and I've just been so happy since. So it was weird how that's what I wanted, and then I got in, you know, with these people, and it's like, let's just build this great studio. So for me, it was just perfect timing.
Yeah, this is all a case for manifesting, like,
but it really
how
is.
That happened.
Isn't it? It's crazy. I still can't believe it. And I still pinch myself. And I'm like, wow, I'm so lucky.
Looking at what everyone on your team has done in the past, it's like incredible, incredible experience brought all together.
Oh, yeah. And everyone is so nice. There's no egos. There's no, you know, competing against each other. And it's just like, we're all just trying to tell good stories, make great movies, you know, especially the first one coming out. So it's yeah, it's such a great place.
So you have like two new films in development, Century Goddess and Trouble.
Yeah.
Which apparently Danny McBride is part of, which is really fun.
I know. We got to pitch to him, and he is the night, you know, someone you love and you're like, I don't want to be disappointed, you know, when sometimes you meet your heroes in real life, and he is a nicest guy. And he's so into looking at the boards and, oh, this is so exciting. And his writers are lovely. So, yeah, really, that was like, oh, exciting, you know. I mean, you look at everyone across the board and everyone knows what they're doing. And, you know, people have worked on great movies and experience. So I think there is a lot of interest in Spire. And I mean, I love the movie we're making at the moment, you know, and I think a lot of people can relate to it. So they're in it for the long haul. So, you know, especially with bosses like Brad and PJ, you feel very safe, you know. It's very much looking to the future. And it's great because they have a studio in Burbank and they have a studio up in San Francisco, which is great. So, and then they're talking about, you know, more people coming on. So since I've started, just seeing the company grow, it's very exciting. So it's only going to grow more and more.
So they've been around for a while?
No, it is a new studio. I think they started in 2020. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing growth in 2 years.
So that's why when you see that, you're kind of like, no, this is legit. You know, this is going to be a great company.
It's always exciting to go to a place where they're new, fresh, and excited to take risks, you know?
Yes.
Like, so many exactly. Others are risk avoidant.
yeah. And I definitely feel that with Spire. And what's nice is Brad and PJ, you know, like Brad is directing, you know, and then you have the creative cadre, which is Mike, Sean, Karen, and Ted. And like everyone has a voice. And they listen to people, which is great. So that's what is really exciting. Because I've worked in, when you work in big companies, sometimes your voice gets lost, you know. And where here, it's you feel like you can express yourself and no idea is too crazy, you know. So it's actually nice to be, your voice is heard, which I definitely feel at Spire.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I know that you're very passionate and opinionated about pitching, like awards and stuff.
God, you know, it's so funny because when I came from TV, because I'm so shy. So, you know, you're in your cubicle, you hand your board, you know, and it goes off and then you go to the next one. And then when I got into feature, I was like, you mean I have to stand up there and I have to pitch in front of people, you know? And it got to a point where I would get so nervous and just like, I mean, I'd be drinking, you know, herbal stuff to calm my nerves. And then it got to a point where I was like, you know what? I'm going to enjoy this. And I'm just going to enjoy this moment and do my best. That's all I can do. My mother used to say, just do your best. That's all you can do. And then I got into my mind. It's like, I'm telling a story. I'm a storyteller. So no matter what the scene was, I'm telling you a story. Like, you know, we're all sitting in a room and I'm reading a book and I'm telling you a story. I know this sounds corny, but that's how I would, you know, that's how I would pitch. It's like, I'm telling, hey, listen, guys, I'm telling you this story and we're all going to sit around and just kind of owning the sequence, and especially doing the best I could, you know, with the sequence. So that's when it kind of clicked for me. It's like, I'm telling a story. I'm a storyteller. I'm not just, and he goes into the other room and she sits down. And I'm not great with voices. Like, I would see some, you know, story artists and they're like, do all the different wacky voices. And I'm not, I'm very monotone, but I would try and sum up the energy and, you know, like, hey, this is exciting. So that, I don't know if that makes sense or if that
totally
helps.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's like, because, yeah, I've seen those, you know, very extroverted big pitches.
Yeah.
Right? And it always feels like we need to be like that. But, yeah, I love hearing your experience because it really, like, proves that you don't have to have that energy. As long as, like, I've met a lot of, like, soft talkers that just pull everyone in the room in, you know? So it's just it's different, but they're both valid.
Exactly, because that's a good point, because I realize it's like, look, I have, you know, I read one of your interviews. It was Voyage LA and I loved it. And it's like, you have to be who you are, you know, because when I try and pretend, and I did, and it was a disaster, you know what I mean? It's like, I need to be myself. I can't, you know, and there's quiet moments in story where you need to breathe and it's not all wacky and zany. And it's, and also, to be honest, you're looking at the work and the work speaks for itself. So, you know, if I'm looking at a pitch and someone's soft spoken, I'm not going to be, oh God, you know, I'm looking at the work. So the work should speak for itself. But as you say, we're all different. We're all like artists and we have different ways of speaking. You know, I was at a panel. Spire had this like offsite work and there was a panel and there was different people and there was one guy and I kind of was like, oh, and he was very soft spoken and I went, yay, you know, like all the other guys were, yeah, and he was very soft spoken but he just had as much to say as important, you know, whereas I used to think it was a bad thing if you're soft spoken. That's just, you know, that's who I am. You know, so yeah
I took improv classes to try to come out of my shell more.
I like, saw that, yeah. And you liked that?
I did, yeah. I really love improv and sketch comedy and feel like it gave me a lot. However, like, I definitely push more because I feel like, I don't know, in the writer's room, it's like, I gotta be big.
Yeah,
I'm still trying to find my balance. But it's so great to hear your experience with that.
Yeah, and it's I've been in rooms where I'd think of an idea and I wouldn't say it. And then someone else had come up with the idea. And I'm like, darn, like, why didn't I just bloody speak up? So then I got to the point where I was like, no, I'm going to start saying ideas. Because sometimes people would look at you like, that's a crazy. Like, what are you? And then I got to the point, I'm like, well, hold on a minute. Because sometimes what happens is you come up with an idea and someone goes, no, no. But then they come off, they have an idea off your idea. So if I didn't come up with that crazy idea, you wouldn't have come up with this idea and it wouldn't change things. So no idea is stupid and no voice is, you know, shouldn't be heard. So it's like you say, sometimes you have to push. And I had the same issue. It's like, oh, you know, but now I'm like, I don't care. Maybe it's getting older. You're like, I don't give a shit. I'm just going to say...
I think that's part of it too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When you're collaborating with like directors, like it feels like a very like with the other storyboard artists, the director. I hear sometimes writers are in the feature room, right? And it's like this organic thing. I would love to hear about that collaboration and safe space, and what you think is best for collaborators to keep in mind.
I think. Yeah, it's pretty, and it also, again, it depends on who, you know, you're working with. Yeah. Some people are not, you know, they don't want people in the room and they don't want to hear ideas. But I think it's very important for, you know, when someone's talking, or like sometimes I find I get excited and I have to remember, it's like, just be quiet. Let the person talk, you know. So it's kind of nice, you know, everyone gets to speak. And it is that safe place. It really depends on the people that if you say something, they're not going to judge you or say that's a silly idea. So it really does depend on who you're working with. Like the people I work with right now, I feel very safe, like when we're in a room, you know. And sometimes ideas aren't great. I might come up with something that's obscure. It doesn't make sense, but knowing that, you know, if people just go, yeah, you know, and sometimes people are thinking, don't feel like, oh, I said something bad and I should just shut down now and not say anything else. It doesn't matter. You're just, everyone's just throwing ideas out there. So
I don't feel like you would have done this, but how does it, because like you're trying to hone in on the director's vision in that room. So like when like your ideas get rejected or it's not like the right fit, how long did it take you to just move on? Like, did, was there any like struggle between what you thought was good and then what got chosen kind of stuff?
Well, sometimes, I mean, I've experienced, you'd come up with something, and then they like, yeah, I don't like that. And you kind of just have to go, okay. And not, because we're very sensitive creatures, artists, and you kind of can't take it personally, because it's like, I always have to remember it's the director's vision. So I would never, like when I'm launched, they call it a launch, and the director sits with you and goes over the script pages, and I listen to everything the director says. Now, I might add, I think a story artist, you might add in a few little things, you know, and sometimes it might go great, and sometimes like, yeah, I don't think we need that. And you just kind of go, okay, you know, because my job, I feel, is I'm boarding this for you. You know, if you're the director, it's like, I want what you want, you know, what's in your head. And sometimes it's hard for someone to, it's in their head, but they can't draw. So they're relying on you to do what they want. So I always listen very carefully. And again, if I do, so, I mean, I've never, you know, maybe in my early days in feature, that was tough, because you're kind of learning how to pitch, and you know, and sometimes things wouldn't go down very well, but it wasn't you're fired, or it's like, no, that's not the tone we want or the vision we want. So it's got better over the years, you know, more experience. But yeah, I used to get a little bit, and I think with age again, I'd kind of go, well, I thought that was a great idea, and why aren't they, you know? But it's like, but it's not my movie. At the end of it, it's not my movie, you know? So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, for sure. I'm wondering, because, you know, there's all types of leaders and directors out there, and some are better at describing their vision. And there's also moments where you're like struggling to, you know, figure it out. So like when you have someone like that, do you have any advice on how to get what's in their head out?
I think, yeah, I mean, I've definitely worked with directors that are like, I don't know till I see it. And I'm like, well, that doesn't help me. That really does not help me, because I'm going to be here redoing. So I think for me, I would pull as much as like information as I could out of them. And there might be like, it could be a scene where it's like, there's a point or there's a moment, and they might say something, and it could be like, and she realizes she'll never be who she wants to be. So I zone in on that. Like if there's a certain thing they say, I'm like, okay, that's the point. I need to, that's my pin. I need to stick my pin in there and then work from there. But trying to pull as much information as I can from them. Like I'll sit them down, piece of paper, and I literally sometimes, you know, do little thumbnails, and I'll say like this, you know, this is what you want. So sometimes that's what I have to do. And then they can go, yeah, like that. So I think when you're visually shown them on a piece of paper, it's like, so we do this, they could be little scribbles.
I feel like earlier in my career, I just expected everyone above me to just know and have the answers. And like the longer I'm here, I'm like, oh, we're all just like kind of flying by the seat of our pants trying to figure it out.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, sometimes I think directors, I mean, you know, they don't know everything. And it's, in all fairness, it's like, you know, they're kind of, as you say, they're going through it as well, and they're not really sure. So, which is understandable. It's like a director can't know everything, you know, and that's why they rely on different people, you know.
So one thing with like writing, you know, character comes first and their journey, like however you can trigger them into making choices to ultimately get to a change is kind of the journey you want them to go on. So like when you're working with like writers like that have written a script, because you like, from my understanding, you basically pull it apart and then bring it back together. And it's this very organic process. I know we keep saying organic process, but it sounds so amazing. And I would love to hear more about that, especially being a writer. I feel like I could say this, our fragile egos. our writing. So like, what is, anything you want to share about that process?
I mean, look, I have so much admiration for writers, big time, because it's, you know, you're writing these words and then they're handed off to people, you know, and it is very fragile. So, usually what happens, and again, it depends on who's directing, you know, like some directors don't want to hear, you know, some directors are writers as well. So it's literally, here's the scene, board it, you know, and then they'll kind of go from there. Usually what happens is, like, we'll get script pages, and again, depending, we'll talk about it. And then when we go to board it as well, so we board the sequences, and then we have the screening, which we just had a screening, and then everyone has to sit back and look at it, and the writers, the director, and there's certain things that aren't working. So then it's all just pulled apart, you know, they go and, everyone figures it out. We write notes and stuff like that. So that's when it's kind of things are pulled apart. And sometimes, you know, the previous screen and maybe some character, the main character didn't seem as, you know, proactive. So then you have to go back and go, okay, in this version, we really need to work on how the main character, you know, he has to be more proactive, he has to affect the people around him. So it's kind of like, it just keeps like a process like that. Then you have another screen in, rip it to pieces. And again, you know, we'll sit in a room, you know, and someone will say, Sharon, what do you think? What are your notes? So usually after a screen, and we'd kind of, you know, this last one, we'd sit around and, you know, Brad's like, what do you think? And then we just start discussing things. And mostly people have the same notes, you know, like, I don't know why the sequence is here. It's not really important. You know, do we really need these characters? You know, what are they saying in the movie? So it's kind of a constant, you know, it's a kind of, you know, have another screen and then what are those notes? And they get better. Screen and say should get better, you know, and then it becomes more clearer, you know, the story arcs or character arcs as well.
Yeah, I think it's really cool to hear about honing in and simplifying, because, like, you can do anything in animation, but should you?
Yeah, and I think, you know, sometimes you can have, and I've seen it in movies, you can have great characters and they come on screen and you go, and then you're like, but do you know, what's it saying about the movie, the theme of the movie? Do we, you know, do we really need that? And actually sometimes being more simpler is actually more difficult, you know, because you've all these great ideas, blah, 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 but then it needs to be kind of streamlined. And it's hard sometimes. You go, oh, we're losing that character. Oh, we're losing that. But it's for the better of the story.
What's the longest production you've ever worked on?
I think the longest I boarded on was Sinbad, that's back at DreamWorks. I think that was the longest. Usually it's a year and a half, but I think that was 2 years. And I remember just going like, kind of done now. You know, it's like drawn the same.
A long stretch for
2 years. Yeah. So I can't remember actually. Yeah, I think that was probably it.
And what's the shortest?
God, I think, yeah, because there was one movie at DreamWorks and it was a ghost movie. And I think I worked on that maybe 6 months and it ended up being shelved. So I never saw the light of day, because sometimes that happens. You end up working on stuff and it doesn't
so
end.
Sad.
Yes, I know. But you know, you kind of have to go, okay, that's part of the job.
Yeah, it's like a miracle anything gets made in Hollywood.
Absolutely, I totally agree. It's so hard. Like, I mean, you know, I was working at Sony on my own project and, you know, I was working on that for 2 years and then, you know, it didn't really you know, go anywhere. So that's difficult, you know, because especially if it's your own personal project. So I'm in admiration. Anyone that can get a movie done, I'm like, wow, you know. Clap hands, you know, because it is difficult, you know, because again, it's a business and, you know, people are like, well, how much money is this going to make? So, you know, whether, you know, you're an artist and you're like, but this is my personal. It's like, yeah, but is it going to, you know, so again, it's a business.
So at Spire, are you like in a management position now as well as boarding?
I'm doing boarding. And then I'm also developing a couple of projects on the side. So that's fun. Because again, it all goes back to storytelling. So for me, I love coming up with ideas. So I love building worlds and stuff like that. So
now that you're doing development, is your like next steps, the goals you want being the director?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I would like to, like, for me, I have to be really invested in something like my project at Sony. If I was directing that, I'm really invested because it's my own personal story. I think with these projects, you kind of start to love the characters, you know, and you kind of, you know, because everything for me, it's like my mother used to say, she was a great writer, she'd say, write what you know. So for me, I have to be emotionally attached. So kind of if it went off to someone else, I'd be like, wait, whoa. I'd still want to be involved somehow, you know. I mean, if someone else is directing it, that's fine, but I'd still want to be involved in it, you know, like whether it's boarding or involved in the story. But I think, yeah, when you start building worlds and characters, you get so invested in them, you know, and you can see them. You know, you can see the scenes and the characters, so.
Yeah. Have you had to change how you communicate? Like, you're now the person with all of it in your head. So, like, how do you, like, I know that, like, it's not in production yet what you're developing, but, like, just, like, communicating it to, like, the big bosses you have to, like, pitch to.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and this is earlier on. I usually love, sometimes when I'm not, I don't really have it in my head and I'm like, it's this. So I kind of have to learn how to hone in my skills and very simply, like, this is the log line. This is the theme, you know. And then also I love looking for reference. Like I love going on Pinterest and Google and I'm going, there's the tone. Like if I see an image and I'm going, that's the tone. I know some people tend to, it's like Ghostbusters meets, you know, Dracula or something. I can't myself for some reason. I kind of, it's more about what's the theme of the story.
I have a difficult time explaining like writing or developing an idea to people. Like, how would you describe it? Because it does feel, I think you said amorphous earlier, and it is.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's kind of, you mean like coming up with a story from.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, I mean, with the, you know, one of the projects, it's, you know, it's Brad's idea. So you're kind of going, hey, what about this? I just go, I love fantasy. I like certain styles of movies. So I don't know. I just, someone might trigger something. And it's like, I hate when people do this or people say this to you. And what about a character who's tired of this kind of situation? I can relate to that, you know. So I always have to relate to something deeply. And then it kind of just builds from there. And then, you know, especially fantasy, I love fantasy, so then I start building worlds because I've done it since I was a kid, you know. And my mother used to say, like, going to bed and I'd think of something nice, so I'd build these little stories in my head. And I just kind of, or I'd see people on the bus, I love people watching, so then I'm going, what if that person was, you know, a Secret Service agent and, you know, the villain was a dog or so. And then I just start coming up with ideas and then I write them down. And You know, you might say it to a friend, hey, I had this idea, and they're like, oh my God. So then you just start building from there. I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I think I've encountered some situations where it was like, why'd you choose that? I was like, I just related to it. Like, I lived that little experience that fueled the rest of this. But then it's like, oh, well, could we do something else? It's like, oh, well, I built out the world based on that one feeling. Because like, you get hired because you are you, because of your brain, because of your talent. But then when it's like, I always feel like selfish being like, oh, well, I chose this because I love the ocean. You know, I want to write about the ocean. They're like, I'd prefer it to be in the sky. And then it's like, okay, how do I reconfigure this in my mind and reconnect with it in a different way?
So
I guess that just like kind of simplifies into the artistic part of the craft with the commercialism, because you know we want to do something special, tell an amazing story and in a very artistic way, but there's still this commercial aspect. So like, how do you balance the two?
I mean to be honest, I get frustrated, and I just wish there was more original stories. And don't get me wrong, like when you see, you know, like IPs and it's great, they make money, but it's like when you hear things like, oh, we just want another Minions, or, you know, it's great, but I just think, God, all the stories, the amazing original stories that never get, you know, like, what's the hook, you know, it's that business end, and I get frustrated with that, to be honest. And you know, I've experienced it, and it's like, but you know, people really like this story. It's like, yeah, but it needs a hook. What's the hook? You know, and you're just like, ugh. So I have to say, I do get frustrated, and I would like to see more original stories.
Same.
Yeah. People do. And I think people do crave that, like kids as well. It's like, I mean, you know, like I think back on like Alice in Wonderland. I love that story. It's so, wow. It's so out there. You know, and people still love that story. And it's like, you know, a caterpillar who smokes on a mushroom. And, you know, I mean, I think if I was pitching that today, they'd go, what the fuck is this?
I agree.
She grows, she gets big, she gets small, the queen cutting off people's heads. But yet everyone loves that story, and it's very original. That's my frustration, because like, when you see the excitement of the sea beast, I loved Mitchell's Versus the Machines. It was original. Oh, and I was working at Sony when he was making it, and it was very much a personal story about his family, and that's what I loved about that movie. So yeah, when I see original stories, I get excited.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot this, but you boarded on Into the Spider-Verse, which is so cool.
I remember being at Warner Brothers, and I wasn't on it for very long, but because basically I was put on another movie. I went over to work on that, and then they needed help on another movie, and I'm like, I want to work on that. Then they put me on, and just the artwork, it was just like mind-blowing. And again, when I saw that movie, I went, okay, it's Spider-Man, it's, you know, there's been so many movies, but just how original it looked, it was just mind-blowing. And like, that really affected me, and that's what I love at Sony. It's like each filmmaker is doing it in their own style, so there's not like Disney where it all looks like Disney, and I'm not knocking Disney, but it's nice to see a studio saying, whoever's making, you're making your movie, you know, you did develop the style. It doesn't have to be all the same, which is great, because, you know, it's filmmaking, but it's also art and motion. You know, there's so many styles and to choose from. So, yeah.
Yeah, totally. And the thing I love about the style of Into the Spider-Verse is that it's organically from the history and the property itself, because people are like, we need more movies like this. It's like, well, I don't know if the style, like, it'd look cool for sure on other movies, but like, it was perfect for this because of its legacy.
Yeah, which I hope we don't. That's sometimes what happens in animation. It's like, and especially big business, they're like, we want a movie like that, do it like Spider-Verse, and they're like, no, you're not getting the bloody thing. It's like, that was that movie. You know, it just means coming up with more original ideas and, you know, things that people haven't seen before. So that's when I get a bit, you know, we want a movie like that. It's like, no.
Yeah. Who's one of your favorite fictional characters?
I don't know. I think for me, there's so many. I'm like, I do like Alice in Wonderland. What I like about that story is coming of age, and I can relate to, you know, like we were saying about our body going big and small, and just the kind of trying to navigate your way through this crazy world, like adult world, shifting from a child into a young woman, but yet told in a very whimsical way. So I like stories that are kind of deep, but then they're kind of, they're made for kids to watch, and then they can go back and watch it again and go, oh wow, that's what that was about. You know, I didn't realize, you know, when I was watching it. So I don't know if that makes sense, if that's, oh, there's so many.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, I love the line, The Witch in the Wardrobe. I read that book so many times, and there's like deep messages that, you know, so I think if I was doing a story, I kind of resonate with that. It's like, okay, here's a story, but there's actually a deeper meaning. I can relate to the Mad Hatter.
Right. It's fun to have subtext.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's an interactive piece of like fiction, you know, it's, yeah, an experience.
And that's why I think that kind of, as a kid watching movies like that, kind of, or stories, it kind of, you know, so it's like, well, let's tell a story, but let's have a deep meaning, because, you know, whether it's mental health or, you know, people being bullied, I mean, I can relate to that. So there's so many, you know, I'd like to see more storytelling of things that can, you know, like, oh my God, I don't feel like I'm insane. Because I felt as a kid, like I felt very isolated. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I had great parents, but I was an artist. I didn't know, it was hard for me to communicate, you know, like other people. And I was very awkward. So I'd love to see more stories for kids like that, that feel that way, that can go, oh my God, like there's a character that I can relate to, you know, there's other people out there like me. So just that, I'd love to see more of that, you know. Yeah.
Same. It's, yeah, like looking in a mirror right now with that feeling, because yeah. I 100% was the shy, introverted kid. So I hear
and look
you.
At and you now.
Make those stories. I know. I'm pushing right now. I'm like, I'd rather, like, I want to hide in a hole.
I still do, but I think I read in your interview, it's like, I'm weird and I'm leaning into it. And I went, yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Which I was like, yep, I totally relate to that. So yeah.
Yeah. That's something I embrace on my good days. Not yeah. every day. I'm like, oh yeah, I said that.
Yeah, I know. It's a constant challenge, but you know.
Yeah. It's daily management. What is something you know now that you wish you knew sooner?
Just what we were talking about, and kind of just celebrating who you are and the weirdness, and not being so, you know, hiding away from everything. And, you know, I just wish, you know, like speaking up more and not feeling like I don't have a voice, if that makes sense. I wish I could go back and just shake myself and say, Sharon, that was a good idea. You know, you should own your space and you have as much to say as anyone else. So I think probably that. And don't work so hard. Take care of your health. That's another thing which people, you know, because I think as artists, we tend to, you know, we go into that zone of work, work, work. But I think health is very important. Mental health, physical health. That's another thing I wish, because I just go into the zone and I'm like, oh, I need to, you know, do more hours. And I think for artists, we need to take a break. And I think be out in nature, be inspired. You don't have to just be at your desk all the time. So that's a big one for me as well.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah,
I definitely struggle to get away from the desk.
So yeah, and it's a mental thing. It's, you know, we're artists, and it, you know, it's like this. Oh, we're only good enough as many hours as we work, but sometimes it's not the case, you know. And I have experienced that the last few years working at home. It's like I need to just turn off, because that's when I get inspired. It's like, okay, I need to go out, look at a tree, hug it, look at the grass.
Yeah,
you know.
Was there a point when you found at least a healthier division between what you do as your as work and you as a person?
I'm still struggling with that, honestly, because like you said, you hit the nail on the head. It's like, you know, I feel, you know, because always being so insecure, it's like, well, my work is everything. And when I get, you know, great job, Sharon, it's like, oh, you know, but at the same time, I'm forgetting that, you know, I haven't left the desk other than use the restroom for, you know, 14 hours. So I'm still trying to, you know, my husband and myself, we kind of got a place in Cambria. And I says, well, if I'm working at home, I need to be in nature. So I tend to go out walking more. And I'm really trying to. So it's a struggle I'm having right now, but I think it's important. So I'm trying to separate, as you say, myself as a human being, an artist, from my work. It's like, yeah, Sharon, you worked hard, so you're good at what you do. So now just give other Sharon a break, you know.
Yeah.
Give her a mental break, you know.
Oh. Well, thank you so much for talking with me and coming on the podcast. I could obviously talk to you longer, but I'll respect your time.
Yes. So chatting with you.
I can't wait to see what you do as an individual in the future, but also like what you're gonna make with Spire.
Yeah.
So everyone, keep an eye out, and we'll see your movie really soon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
It's been a blast. Yeah.
Ink and Paint Folk is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by the year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. This episode was produced by me, Cassie Soliday, with the magic of the internet from beautiful Burbank, California. Music by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk podcast. Stay colorful.